This is the CU 2.0 podcast with your host, Robert McGarvey. Big new ideas about credit unions. Big new ideas about credit unions. CU 2.0 podcast.
This is not an infomercial for Synaptic, an AI vendor with a particular focus on lending. Repeat, it is not an infomercial. There are two guests on the podcast, Eric Steinhoff, a Synaptic Executive Vice President, and Kevin Wilborn, Vice President of Consumer Lending at $3.3 billion Giza Credit Union. Wilborn is a big fan. Essentially, you will hear that Synaptic's tools are a way to speed up loan decisioning and also to make the decisions very possibly better. It's hard not to like better and faster. Wilborn also tells what loans he plans to run through Synaptic, lots of different kinds. It's a tight podcast, short, crisp. But in it, you will hear how Synaptic, in fact, creates better tools for smarter underwriting. It's a short course in the secret sauce of an AI engine. Steinhoff also tells why he prefers to work with credit unions over community banks. You'll want to hear that. At Giza, meantime, the determination is to up its lending game. That is why Wilborn took a look at new tools for smarter processing. When he heard the Synaptic presentation, he knew he had found the vendor for Giza. If you're in that range, you might want to check it out. Find out more about AI, by the way, in CU 2.0 podcast episode 138. A lively talk a few weeks ago with CU 2.0 founder Kirk Drake. There's a link to it in the show notes. It's a good companion piece to this podcast. Gives you a lot more about AI, a lot more detail. This Giza podcast gives you a drilling into what's going on at one particular credit union. And that is valuable, valuable, valuable stuff. Listen up. Let's start with a odd observation, which is it possible that AI can help reduce bias in issuing loans? I.e., can the machines be bias-free and avoid things like racial prejudice?
Some loan applications are turned down because of the last name, for instance. I don't know if that's true or false, but I hear that often. And there's no reason to have bias built into your system.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a risk when you're having humans make decisions, is that there are biases either overt or underlying that they may not even be aware of. And one of the benefits of moving to machine-based decisioning is to hopefully eliminate as much of that bias as possible. Generally, any lender is held up to regulatory scrutiny to show that their credit decisions are not exhibiting bias, and any of the solutions we deliver for our clients, we do undertake some analysis to make sure that we're complying with all fair lending regulations and to show that the models are not creating or enhancing any bias that may have been there in the underlying population.
So why did Giza decide to adopt this? What's in it for the credit union?
I think for credit unions, a lot of times is we like to handhold our members. You know, you got to have that personal touch. Well, if you look back in 2008, where the amount of credit unions were then, I think that there was 13 or 14,000. Fast forward to, you know, even now there's like 6,000. So what credit unions are being forced to do is adapt and change and to be more tech savvy. But can we be more tech savvy and create speeds and efficiencies like a bank or maybe a fintech, but also having that personal touch at the same time. And for many years, we tried to create our own in-house model, which, you know, I'm not a data scientist. I'm a lender. I don't have all the analytic capabilities. I mean, I can, but there are machines and companies out there that do this for a living that are a million times better than it will ever be. And if we can find a good partner that is, you know, that has this technology and is looking to grow, we want to grow with them and create the best product as we move forward. And by creating a better product, we also get to pass that on to our members, create speed and efficiency in turn times. There's nothing better than getting on, you know, applying for a credit card and knowing right then and there that, hey, I've been approved for $5,000. It may not be the limit that you want, but the fact that you got something in return within seconds is pretty cool. You know, Apple Pay is a great example. You can get approved and you can get the card in your wallet within 3 minutes, assuming you accept the terms and conditions. And so that's where our institution is trying to go. But this is the first step in getting down that road. You know, so there's definitely a lot of advantages, but again, you still got to keep that human touch there. And that's why we'll send all of our loan applications to Synaptic. If they decide, hey, we wouldn't approve it through the auto underwriting system, then we'll let a human look at it, because the things that they can't see is sometimes how long has a member been. You know, the member could have been with us for 10 or 15 years and charged off everybody else, but never charged off ESIN. They've got deposit accounts. So there is a human element that we need to maintain and create that environment for our members of why did they choose a credit union. And that's just a really prime example of why we put a human touch on there as well, because that's what our members expect.
Now, what kinds of loans are you running through this system?
Yeah, so right now we're going to run all of our credit cards, our autos through it, personal loans, boats, RVs. We're going to run kind of the gamut through that. We have another program called Lenders Protection or Open Lending that is for strictly for auto loans. And they take all of our 570 to 649 auto loans. And we run all of our autos through that program. So Synaptic will take everything outside of that program, but they'll run the entire gamut of the consumer lending products that we have.
Will there be any loans that you won't, any types of loans that you won't put through the Synaptic process?
No, I think they have great data analytics. And you know, we're going to run everything through there, and then we'll continue to revisit on a quarterly basis and see what's working, what's not working. But our institution has really been on the indirect. That's our focus, is indirect lending and autos. In the last 4 or 5 years, we've put a lot of focus and emphasis on credit cards. And we've done a good job at growing that portfolio. Personal loans, RVs, boats. We're in the game, but we're not in the game. We've kind of got 1 foot in and 1 foot out. In order for us to be a benefit to our membership group and grow long-term, we've got to be able to offer all products and services to our members kind of at the same rate that we do autos and credit cards. So we think that Synaptic is a perfect partner for this and to help us grow and accomplish the things that we want to accomplish long-term.
Did you look at other vendors?
Actually, I'll tell you kind of a funny story, is I was looking at, there were two other vendors, and Dakota, who works with them, had kind of reached out on a whim. And I was like, well, you know, we kind of got to go through this anyway. So I'll sit and listen to what they have to say, but I'm not interested. I sat through the presentation. By the end of the presentation, I was like, wow, I think this is the direction we have to go. And I was talking to our credit risk manager saying, this is the direction that we need to go. And here's all the reasons why. So they weren't even a blip on our radar when we did sit down with them, but we were so impressed with them, the data analytics and the capabilities that they have and the streamlined process that they've created, like we could not not go with them. So it's an exciting partnership.
Now, why, either you can take this one or perhaps both of you should take it. Why can machines do a better job of analyzing a credit application than a human being? It's a sort of matrix question. Why is the machine smarter?
I think, you know, from my perspective, machines, they take all the emotions out of it. If you've ever underwritten a loan, you know, you can be at home and, you know, your kids couldn't get out the door and you're late and you're irritated. And so you come and unconsciously you will probably deny loans because you're pissed off.
Oh, you put it that way. I'm with you 100%.
You may not, or, you know, you know, something amazing just happened or whatever. And so you're a little bit more giving. You know, it doesn't make one right or wrong. There's definitely some advantages to human underwriting, but it takes that personal touch out, and it gets more to the analytics piece. It takes out the judgment, takes out the bias, and it's a whole hell of a lot quicker than a human being. And that is what we as human beings in society today, we have iPhones. We expect instant stuff, you know, Amazon. Why does everybody love Amazon? Because it's instant, you know. I can click a few buttons and it's on my doorstep in a day or two. I could walk down the street and do it, but it's a whole lot more fun to do it on our phones. So society is what's telling us that this is a direction that we have to go. So
you see that with home mortgages, which used to be owned by S&Ls and credit unions. It's now primarily owned by fintechs. Mm-hmm. And it's got, why? Because they say, we'll give you a verdict within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. If you want to play in that game, you got to get your time frame down. Eric, so why do you think machines are smarter?
I mean, a lot of what Kevin said, I think he hit the nail on the head with regards to humans do just bring baggage in, and it's not just We talked earlier about biases. Some of those are just inherent in how we view the world, but a lot of it is mood based. I mean, there's been countless studies of, say, if you go before a judge to be sentenced, you don't want to go right before lunch because he's hungry and grumpy, and there's literally studies that show that they're more likely to give worse sentences right before lunch than right after lunch. So there is absolutely truth to the baggage that we humans carry around with us when we're making any decision. What I want to expand on is how the machine learning and AI technology works, because that's, I think it brings a lot of the beauty of how humans think of things without all of that baggage. So traditionally, you know, before the last, say, 5 to 10 years, credit risk models were almost exclusively linear regression or logistic regression, which is just a simple formula which says, you know, take this variable, multiply it times a coefficient, plus this one, minus this one, minus this one, and you get a score like a FICO. The way the machine learning algorithms that we use, and we generally tend to use gradient boosting techniques for building our models, the way those models work is not dissimilar from how humans work. And so what it'll do is, but it just on a much larger scale than a human can, and to Kevin's point, instantaneously, which a human can't do. So if Kevin and I were to sit down and go through like 100 loan applications, we could probably segment them into, okay, these 8 look alike and these 12 look alike, and we could create a bunch of segments, and we could figure out which customers we wanted to approve and which ones we want to decline. What a machine learning model can do is it can do that on a massive scale, can create 1,000. Our typical model will create at least 1,000 subsegments that it'll place each client or each application into, and then will instantaneously, when it sees a new application, figure out which of those 1,000 subsegments that new applicant looks like, and will have a pre-coded decision for that subsegment and can deliver that message instantaneously. But I love that the machine is starting to think like a human does, rather than just like a pure mathematical equation, which is where we were not too long ago.
I think your answer anticipated the next question I was going to ask, which was, first time I saw something that looked like machine credit verdicts was literally 20 years ago when a pop-up showed up on my computer saying, apply for the new Yahoo credit card, decisions in 1 minute. And I said, nonsense, can't possibly be true. So I applied and I got a decision. I got the credit card inside a minute. And that had to be based on a FICO type score. They yep. must have looked up one data point, said, good FICO score. Fine, send them the card.
I'm sure that's right.
But that, given the technology and the data that was available 20 years ago, it almost certainly had to just be a relationship with either FICO or one of the big credit bureaus. So you're looking at vastly more data points now.
Correct. And it depends on the product and depends on the segment and the risk appetite of the lender. But we have relationships with multiple data providers, not just the big three bureaus. And we will typically, when building a solution, bring in at least one of those other data providers. So we have a partnership with LexisNexis that we use their data to build better models than purely based on credit profiles alone. We also have a partnership with a company called Microbuilt, which also provides alternative data. Process of several other partnerships. We have a partnership with the company Centrelink, which offers fraud solutions. So we're constantly out there, and we have a member of our team, Mark Drew, who is constantly looking for new data providers, new solutions for us to bring to clients. Because, you know, I'm sure Kevin knows those are out there, but I doubt he has the time to do the research and figure out which ones add value and which ones don't. And so that's some of the value that we hope to bring to our partners.
Kevin, I was talking with an AI expert the other day, and he said, one thing no one likes to talk about is the impact of AI on staffing. Is your staffing constant? Having adopted this, have you increased staff, decreased staff? It stayed the same?
Well, for now, I will tell you that we have not increased or decreased staff yet. I think that, you know, we're in the phase of implementing the system with Synaptic, and we're excited to do that. So I think staffing models will change by attrition. So as we go through time, you know, I mean, through COVID, I'll give you an example. Through COVID, you know, people were getting laid off, and our CEO said, "We're not laying anybody off. We're gonna figure this out. Everybody's gonna be employed. Everyone's going to have a paycheck." And that's kind of our commitment to our employees. Now, as employees leave or change jobs or whatever, that's when we really need to look at and say, okay, I've got 10 underwriters right now. One left. Do I need to bring another one back? And that's where we're, you know, the staffing culture will change is in time, because there's definitely other things that we can have underwriters do than just sit and just plug in numbers, you know? And that's what we're looking to do is, hey, instead of looking at 100 loans a day, you might only look at, you know, let's just say 50 loans a day, but there's other things that you can be doing to improving your position and bring value to the organization in other ways. So I look at it more as, you know, if I can have a machine do it, you know, and do the complexity of it, I would rather have a human being instead of just kind of being mind numb, you know, kind of being mind numbing every day, doing the same thing repetitive. Give them some complexity, have them solve problems, have them come up with different solutions to maybe how we intake applications or how we touch members after the fact or how we communicate with dealers. Like, start using more creative thinking, because that's the difference between AI is there is no creative thinking. It's strictly, here's a number. It's yes or no. One of one is two. One of one can't make three. So we need underwriters to be more creative. And that's something that an AI or a bot can't do, is that creativity, is being creative.
Well, I think I was talking with a longtime credit union guy the other day who told me that staffing in credit unions is down by about 50% over 20 years, 20 years ago when he started in the industry. And it's mainly machines have replaced certain jobs. That's just the way it goes. And that's true in a lot of industries. And yeah, I worked in journalism for years. Companies used to employ typists. You know, that stopped a good 10 or 15 years ago. But there used to be an army of typists, people who did nothing but type. And so technology just moves forward. How much is this costing you? Is it costing you a lot, a little? I mean, how are you paying? Flat fee by application?
Yeah. So one of the things that's nice about them is that we pay a per app fee, but I don't know, you know, we're trying to grow exponentially very quickly in the next 5 years. And the great thing about Synaptic is I've told them this. I said, you know, I don't know where we're going to go. You want to charge us by app now, that's totally fine. But as we go down the road and in time, we may move to a flat fee. And that's the one thing that I really liked about Synaptic is that they want to create a true partnership. It's not about the dollars and cents. I mean, it is, but they want to provide the best quality, the best product at the best value for the institution that they're partnering with. And that's what I found that was attractive is when I did bring this up, they're like, yeah, absolutely. Like, we'll talk about it in 6 months. We'll talk about it in a year. Like, we're flexible. Like, we're going to grow with you. We want to grow with you. And those are the people that I want to partner with. Is it's not always about, you know, nickel and dime here, nickel and dime there. I just want it to be fair. And if we're not being fair or they don't feel like we're being fair, I want them to bring it to the table. And that's, you know, that's the great thing about Synaptic that I really like is they're fair. And anything that we've ever asked them to do, they've done. They're prompt. They're very responsive. So it's been awesome so far. So right now it's on a per app basis. It might get down the road to where it's just a flat fee. We just don't know because I don't know where the volume is going to go.
Trajectory of computer stuff is that costs do go down. Did you benchmark? Did you do a test where Synaptic did 100 applications? You have human beings do 100 applications, and you looked at what the verdicts were.
Eric, you can answer this because we're in the process of sending some data.
Yeah, we're in the process of doing that analytics right now. So that's a standard part of the analysis that we'll deliver to Kevin. Is with the deployment of our platform, we'll develop the custom model and make recommendations for. Here's where, given your risk appetite, given your customer profiles, here's where we recommend you cut off. And if you choose those approved decline strategies, or, you know, and Kevin and team can make tweaks to it as needed, then we'll show them, okay, if you had this in place in 2019, 2020, here's what the approvals would have looked like. You would have approved these additional 5,000 people and you would have declined these additional 2,000 people. So you net would have approved 3,000 more, but your credit losses would have been lower because the incremental approvals are much lower risk.
How many credit unions do you work with?
Great question. So we've signed contracts with, I believe, 3 at this point, but I am regularly on conversation in part of the sales process. In conversations with credit unions, I demoed for one yesterday. I demoed for one today. So we're hoping to sign many more here in the next few months.
AI is out of nowhere, the hot thing. Yeah, it's credit unions, like everybody else, get attracted to the new shiny object. And right now, AI is the new shiny object. And a year ago, it was just freaky stuff. You know, don't even bother me with this. But now it's like, tell me more. I want to know more about this. So I think the future, at least short term, is bright. Now, what kind of integration do you need into the credit union technology, the core system, say?
Yeah, so our solution is generally a bolt-on into the LOS that the credit union is using. So usually they have an existing loan origination system in place that is taking in the application, pulling whatever credit bureaus they're relying on. We plug into that system, and we basically, when that application is submitted, it is then passed through to Synaptic's platform. We may then pull additional data sources. I mentioned LexisNexis, Microbuilt, some of these other sources we look at. We may pull additional data sources. We will run our scores, produce our approved decline or manual review recommendation, and then we return that back to the LOS to finalize and actually create the loan. But it's a pretty simple bolt-in. Obviously, some LOS systems are more dynamic and more agile for API connections than others. But it just uses basic API technology.
So what kind of technical skills are needed at the credit union to keep using the system?
Credit union, I mean, obviously they need to have a technical resource who can facilitate those conversations and make sure that we're getting the data from the right place and that those recommendation is being presented to the underwriter or to the underwriting system as a final decision. But there should not be, when we're deploying a strategy, there should not be a lot of heavy lifting from the technical team at the credit union. We try to do as much of that heavy lifting as possible. And we have, you know, a team of data scientists, but we also have a team of developers and deployment engineers who are responsible for making sure that everything gets connected as it should.
Are you also selling to community banks?
We are, yes. We
it's not like Dancing with the Devil. It's okay.
No. I know there's
Kevin might there. Disagree about that, but I'm more neutral.
Yeah. So I will say my experience in working with banks is they're slower to make decisions. There's just a lot more concern, regulatory or otherwise, and vendor management, vendor protocols. So we do work with banks. We're very happy. We enjoy our relationships there. But I get more excited when we're working with newer clients, whether that be fintechs or credit unions, because it feels like we're firing on the same cylinders and really making decisions very rapidly, which is what I like about working at a smaller company. I like moving quickly and solving problems for clients.
What kinds of fintechs are you working with?
Majority of the ones we've been working with recently are in the auto lending space. So that's kind of a sweet spot for us. And that's another natural kind of overlap with the credit union space. Most credit unions have a pretty big auto portfolio relative to their overall portfolio size. And so we do a lot of indirect auto lending across the full spectrum. I'd say that most of the indirect lenders that come to us tend to be in that near prime or even subprime space in the indirect auto.
That's a really hot space.
Yes.
I haven't done much research into it, but I know I hear so much about it. I guess you can make, there's a lot of money to be made in that space. Probably a lot of money to be lost in that space too. Whereas
it depends how far down you want to go.
How far down do you go?
Oh, we go all the way down to 0 and 850, but I think that when you get it, you know, this is just kind of my thought process. I don't know if there's any data analytics to back it up, but typically when you get into those 600 to 650 range, those are people that have had some setbacks maybe and are trying to kind of bring themselves back up. And if you can get in on, you know, get with them early and partner with them early on a loan, chances are they're going to make payments. It's at 650, sometimes at 680 those seems to be the group, maybe even a little higher, that are on they're simply on the fence. You know, they've got high credit card debt. They don't really know how to pay it down, or they've had some delinquencies in the past, or they're, you know, kind of had some struggles. So it's kind of, that's kind of how I see things sometimes, is that 600, 650, even maybe a little bit lower. You know, you can give people a competitive rate, put them in a good car that they need to get to and from work, and they're grateful for it. You know, and so I think that there is a lot of money to be made, but it's finding a balance between making money, but also doing right, in our case, by our members at the same time, you know, kind of mitigating risk. And that's one of the things that we're going to go to eventually is we do tier-based pricing. So if you're between, you know, this band and this band, you get 499 or whatever the rate may be. But it doesn't necessarily take into account what is the collateral, you know, all these other factors. And I think eventually what we'll get into with Synaptic is the fact that it'll be more pricing based on analytics and actually true risk versus just saying this segment gets 499 and this segment gets 399. It'll be a little bit more on what is the overall risk of this specific member with this credit that's coming to us. So that might be done.
Yeah, that tier-based pricing goes back with at least a big automaker lenders a long time. I think I first heard about that maybe 35 years ago, where there's tier one, tier two, and then things got a little sketchy in tier three, and things were really sketchy in tier four. But each had a each had a different loan rate. So that was, yeah, it could be more sophisticated now because there's a whole lot more data that can be analyzed now. So is there anything else you think credit union people ought to know about this, Kevin?
I mean, the only thing I will say is we work with a lot of different vendors. And vendors can be extremely challenging to work with and difficult to work with. And there are only two vendors that I work with out of the many gamuts that we have that kind of stand out amongst the others. Synaptic is definitely one of them. I've put my name behind them and the things that they're going to say and do and deliver. So it's been a fantastic partnership and it's only early, but I look forward to the years to come of growing with them and providing the best products and services to our members in conjunction with them as well.
Well, I think the sheer simple fact that you agreed to do this podcast speaks a great deal about the confidence and enthusiasm you have about Synaptic.
Yeah, and if I didn't, I wouldn't be on this podcast. I can tell you that much. You can guarantee that.
I might have guessed that. I'm not too smart, but I might have guessed that one. So, Eric, anything you want to add before we close this off?
No, I just want to thank Kevin. I really appreciate the kind words, and we're super excited about working with Visa. And I will just give him a little credit. You know, he's very forward thinking. His team is very forward thinking. They've shown us, you know, a roadmap of not just what they're trying to implement this year, but over the next 4 years. They really have a very clear vision about the kinds of solutions they want to implement to both make better decisions and better experiences for their members while also gaining operational efficiency. And so it's really refreshing to see that. And that's the kind of partner we'd love to work with.
Before we go, think hard about how you can help support this podcast so we can do more interviews with more thoughtful leaders in the credit union world. What we're trying to figure out here in these podcasts is what's next for credit unions. What can they do to really, really, really make a difference in the financial scene? Can't all be mega banks, can it? It's my hope it won't all be mega banks. It'll always be a place for credit unions. That's what we're discussing here. So figure out how you can help. Get in touch with me. This is rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. Robert McGarvey again. That's rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. Get in touch. We'll figure out a way that you can help. We need your support. We want your support. We thank you for your support. The CU 2.0 podcast.